Well, a very good evening and thanks for tuning in here to Terrace Talk on the 1st of January, the first day of the new year of 2024. And as customary, we will be looking backwards this evening on tonight's show. So certainly don't text in or call in because they won't be answered. Now, what a great year it was for Ratmore. And back in January, one of our first best interviews of the year came actually from Donal Murphy as he looked back at Ratmore's historic All-Ireland Intermediate Club win.
Hi, Donal. How's it going? Look, it was unbelievable. It was fiercely emotional. The nature of the game, it was a tight, cagey affair. It was tight coming down towards the end of the match. So when the final whistle blew, I saw him in crying that I had never seen crying before. I was nearly crying myself, to tell the truth. So it was unbelievable because, to the thing, when you start off the year, it's never on your radar to be going to All-Irelands. I mean, our big game last year was to win the county intermediate to go back up senior. We were there for 20 years. We came down in 2019, so that was our number one aim, was to get back up. So really the be-all and end-all of our year was beating the Gaeltacht to win the intermediate championship. And then the possibility of an All-Ireland or a Munster sort of that presented itself. And we grasped the challenge. And like yesterday was just unbelievable is the only word I could use for it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, like, you obviously people will know that you're the father of Paul Murphy, of course, the Kerry player, I mean, and you've been there in those great Kerry days as well, but it's a little bit more special with your own parish. I mean, it's certainly a little bit more different. Describe the contrast that for me, Donal.
It's different. Say for example, at county level, the 5 minutes after Sonny Shea put over the free last year against Dublin, it just so happened that nearly all the parents of the Kerry players were almost in the same place. They were all together in the Hogan Stand. I don't think I ever had 5 minutes in my life like that 5 minutes, the sort of elation. And that's absolutely fantastic. But there's something more primal about experiencing it with your club. And like, we had a function last night, and there was Ratmore people from all corners of the globe had come back for the game. Like, it isn't that long ago that Ratmore created a record in Kerry. Our A team played our B team in Division 3 with the County League. That's where we were. I was talking to six or seven fellas last night. We have photographs of the guys who played in that game. And the Clark, our manager, he was a young gun at the time. He was playing with the Bees. So, you know, to go from... Most of my career was spent down and oscillating between Division 2 and Division 3. To go from that to being a Division 1 club, establishing yourself in Division 1, getting up senior, staying there for 20 years, it's fantastic. We're a pro club, as the Clark always says, we're a family club. But your question was about the difference between county and club. There's something a bit more primal about it being with the club. Yeah. Like last night was just an unbelievable night.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it gels a parish like nothing else as well. I know from the run St. Michael's Filemore a couple of years ago, you always had great supporters, but you'll see people at matches that may have fallen away or certainly mightn't be what you would have considered supporters, and they all tug out and the schools get into it, and I suppose you have the music and the banter and the whole lot, and you do get that huge level of you're representing Kerry, and other clubs will support you, and you know, I suppose maybe below in Division 2 and 3 they'll certainly fight you hard for it, but I mean at this level when you get the free run they will support you. But the most important thing, as I'd imagine, I suppose, are it's a club and club players, and I suppose often enough on this show we talk about the inter-county players and you know the David Cliffords and the Shawnee Shays and the whole lot, but this is won primarily by club players, and to get to this level, an All-Ireland final, I mean the amount of commitment and time, it must be frightening.
There's no doubt about that. Like the GAA, it's just an amazing organisation. It ties you to place like no other sport. If David Clifford was a soccer player, he wouldn't be playing with the equivalent of Fossey now. He'd be with the equivalent of Man United or Arsenal or Liverpool or whatever. You know, you're born into a club and you know, it ties you to that place. You make life decisions based on football. People, you know, they turn down career opportunities because of football. They want to stay playing with their club. So, like, yesterday, for us, and no doubt it was the same for Fuss, it was fantastic for club. you know, the likes of Aidan, Paul, Shane, they get so many kudos and they deserve them all, and the influence they had and the whole running of the day yesterday was huge. But there are so many other players who were playing for the first time in Croke Park. Just a few examples. We have a guy, Fionn Hoolan, was playing wing-back yesterday. His granduncles would have played with Kilkenny in Croke Park. He hasn't put a foot wrong all year. He's not going to be getting Man of the Match awards. He's not going to be noticed by media, but he's doing a job left half back. He's doing it there all year long. Couple of lockdowns in every game. Fantastic player. The whole story of Chrissy Spears, a guy from Maharifils, lost the county final or something, got pissed off, went off to Sydney, met a girl from across the border here, landed back to Rathmore, joined us in 18. One of the best kickers I've ever seen in rugby. Like, his story, his family down from Derry for all the games. You know, Mark Green comes on yesterday, corner forward, inside right, corner forward, gets the ball, gets our last score, a key point. How many hundred times has he done this in Rathmore shirts from all ages, from that exact same spot? So there's all these brilliant, brilliant stories, all these individuals who go through injuries, go through rehabbing, all for the love of club. It's fantastic.
Absolutely. And of course, a man who had, I suppose, his own journey back to Croke Park, 27 years. It was frightening when it was mentioned, because I remember that minor final. Of course, we're talking about Kenneth O'Keefe playing a goal. I won't give away his age, but he's between 44 and 46, some fella says, but so he's close enough to that. But he made two fantastic saves yesterday. He wasn't in goal because he was just the only person you could find to put in there. He was in goal to do a job, and he'd done a fantastic job there.
Kenneth was the man yesterday. He played with the Kerry Miners in Croke Park in 1996. He turned 44 New Year's Eve. Nice. Like, those two saves to the tight cagey game yesterday, both teams had each other well analysed. And I had Rathmore for the saying last night, we were a better team. We were. No, we didn't get a huge amount of breaks from the ref, but that's another story. But we got to take the goals. We got a half chance. Shane Ryan put his diving skills to good use. He got down low to tip it into the net. But it was a sort of a half chance, whereas Galbally got two absolutely gilt-edged opportunities. One in the first half, which would have put him 5 or 6 points up, and which would have meant we were trying to come back against the Tyrone team, which is very difficult. But the save in the second half, like, they'd be talking about Martinez, a save for Argentina in the World Cup final, but Kenneth O'Keefe's save yesterday, like, it'll never be forgotten in Rathmore. It was a match winner. Yeah. What a story, at the age of 44. It's just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable.
Especially the second save, don't you? It's guess you mentioned Martinez. I think there was a bit of Martinez in him, he clapped his hands, he kind of said, come on, give us your bit shot. He was ready for it, and he was ready for it.
He came off his line, he narrowed the angle, he did everything you're supposed to do in the goalkeeping manual.
Absolutely.
Jesus, every Rathmore man and woman in the stand, like, their heart was just sinking rapidly, and bang, Kenneth gets his right toe to it and tips it over for a 45.
Absolutely, it was huge. And of course, it was a moment in time that momentum was shifted with a goal, and you often see games like that where a goal goes in and the next thing, the next point is scored against you as well. Come here, speak to us about the fact that Fossa made the journey a little bit more special with you. I remember, of course, 2009, I suppose, with Skellig Rangers and St. Michael's Filemore. We did double year that year as well. And it was a shared experience, a shared journey, and you had those shared stories. I presume that it was very similar yesterday, obviously, with Fossa, and particularly that they won the first game as well ahead of us, but that gave a great lift for Rathmore.
It did, and even in the week preceding the final. I suppose the officers of our club can't get enough praise for the foresight, the planning, the meticulousness of the detail of the planning they went into. But they were very much helped by the fact that Fossa were involved as well. And there was an awful lot of cooperation between the two clubs in the weeks prior to the final. And the planning had to happen even long before the semi-final, because there was only a week turnaround. And where would you be going looking for hotels with 6 days to go? So there was an awful lot of forward planning, for which an awful lot of people deserve a huge amount of credit. But actually, I was talking to Mark Ryan last night, our captain, who was very nervous pre-match. And he said when he ran out, And when the Fossa players, including the two Cliffords, like when the Fossa players were standing and gave a guard of honour to Rathmore out onto the field, the words he used was, he said, I felt 10 feet tall. So that was a huge, huge lift, you know, for all our players to get running out onto the field. You know, all those small little things, that there's fierce tight margins when you get to All Ireland finals. And, you know, small little things like that made a difference yesterday.
Yeah, and of course, you are right, it's all about small little things. There was some good news before the game from the Lawler family yesterday. I think that might have helped a bit as well.
Oh, look, I mean, like the Lawler family, you know, there was a big fundraising event, bringing Sam Maguire up to the top of the Paps, and Stan Stevens is there for young Brian Lawler. And Brian got great news in the last couple of weeks. And the Lawler family posted up a video of Brian kicking a ball and saying to the Rockmore players, you were rooting for me and now I'm rooting for you. And every one of the players, you know, talked about how much that meant to them. That was great. Like, it was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great to hear.
I suppose just before you go, I suppose, look, I know a lot of people listening in tonight are, look, really proud that, I suppose, it's a fine achievement, it's a fantastic achievement. I mean, there's plenty of comments there already coming in. You know, I suppose there's the easiest way to say it, there's a gale of wind of good well wishes for yourselves and Fossa. But of course, you're back to senior, of course. You're back up with the big boys, I suppose, this year. I was going to say next year, but sure, of course, it's a couple of months' time. Will you put all that in the boiler for a while and just celebrate tonight, I suppose? There'll be no big tasks of winning the county championship just yet, will there?
Oh, there won't. It's exactly 1 year ago since the Clark took over and training started. So it's been a journey of 1 year, and I think they'll...
One call by Jack now, I suppose. He's going straight into the senior goal, maybe. He might even take Shane Ryan's place, you never know. And that, of course, was Donal Murphy looking back at Rathmore's intermediate win. And what a season they had, actually, going all the way to the county semi-finals as well. A fantastic year for them as well. Now, after the break, we catch up with the Ostenstack Park stewards and all the work that they do during the year.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
And you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk here on New Year's Day. Now, we had Rathmore before the break, but we're going to delve into something, an interview that we held on the 20th of February, and a very special interview as well, when we looked at the work of Joe Wallace, Michael Moran and Mick Flavin, who are, of course, Ostenstack Park GAA stewards. Joe, I'll start with you. An easy two-point question. Without going on for 4 hours, just the quick role of a GAA steward. Some guy's at home now tonight having his tea. Are you the guy in the yellow jacket? Are you the guy that goes out and brings the injured person in? Are you the fellow that collects the money tickets? What is just the specific role of the steward as you see it and as you do it on a daily basis?
Well, the role of a steward, number one, is the safety side of it. Common sense prevails an awful lot when we're stewarding. I'm in the tunnel now a lot of the times, like, and the tunnel is a very, very busy spot where you have the teams flowing in and out, 30, 40, 50 players, they're coming in and they're maintenance and like that. So, as I say, number one priority is the safety and looking after the public and looking after the players and the mentors. Now, it's a very enjoyable job when everything is going right for you, because you meet a lot of people, you communicate with a lot of managers, players, mentors, and even the public, like, come up and say hello to you and talk to you, and it's just lovely, like, you know what I mean, like. But it can be dodgy in at times. You have to be very careful. You have a lot of players running out of the tunnel before the match starts, and you have to make sure everything is in order. You'll be looking around them, that the gates are properly closed, and to let the teams out in the field, because you have a lot of young people going to the matches, kids and things like that, and you have to be very careful in them as well. And the stewarding job is, you can be handling people and be aggressive. As I say, common sense prevails. You just tell them to stay back until they have... So nearly all... it's a kind of, a lot of it's all word of mouth, like, you know what I mean? Like,
so there's no art for men aggressive, is there?
No, never was.
You're a very classical kind of people out there, aren't you?
No, we should, like, from all on, so might just find more. We've played you several times in the football, so we know what kind we are. Yeah.
We were far too placid for you. speaking to a man who's very placid all the time, and of course from Carstavine side, the direction of the parish, of course, even though he hides it, pretending to be a Tralee man, Michael Moran. Michael, I met you, Kerry played Galway in an under-20 game 2 or 3 years ago. And I'd say me and you were probably the only two people at it, but you still had to be at it to open the gate and let him in. You have to be there the quiet day as well.
I'm there every day. The quiet day, I used to actually, when I was working night shift, I used to do the school games in the afternoon, Latin version, with Vincent. Mm-hmm. When Vincent had always took for a scoreboard or anything else, he'd always give me a ring. I loved the job. I'm at it a long, long time now.
How long is a long time?
I'm 40 years now.
Wow. Can you remember your first day in the gate? What job did they give you?
I was telling Joe this evening, I was up in the attic today and I found a programme, the first programme I got. It was county final, the Kilmiley and Ballydove.
My God, you were at a hurling one.
I don't know, I have over 1,000 programmes.
Wow. From all the games?
From all the games. I love collecting programmes. It's a passion with me.
You must have a big attic.
Huh?
You must have a big attic.
That's what I said. He's going to fall down to the attic.
Don't pick it up in the attic too often.
But I usually there 2-3 hours before the game.
Yeah. What do you enjoy about the game? I mean, like a lot of people would say, my God, I'm doing something for free and I have to be there 3 hours beforehand and I can't leave till 2 hours after it.
Meeting some of the, you meet, they talk about managers now, some of them are grumpy, some of them are this. But the nicest man I've ever met was Jim, the Dublin manager.
Oh, yeah.
Jim Galvin. Well, a real gentleman. Lovely man to meet. More of them then, they'd nearly push out of the way going in, but 99% of them were very nice.
Yeah. Speaking of 99% of people very nice, Mike, you meet a lot of nice people because you, while this fellow's below on the bottom and you're opening the gate and welcoming, what's your role inside there, Mick? You have a very important job, haven't you?
I wouldn't call it important, yeah. Like I do, we call it the VIP section, you know. And I suppose, look, on match days, on big matches, it's kind of stressful, all right. Like, on a small game, it's grand. But on a big match day, like, you have...
A lot of VIPs.
You have a lot, and you rope a place off in the morning, maybe for 70 or 80 people, and you're hoping then that will do you. And we've never got caught. Luckily, I think last year at the county final, we had one or two seats left at the end of the day, you know.
Right, okay.
But they come late, you see, that's the problem you have. You don't know who's coming, they're coming in maybe just before the final whistle, yeah. Or the whistle blows, like, and then you're hoping that that's the last of them. But, I don't know, as the lad said, you meet people from all walks of life, you know, and you'd have a great old crack, you know. I suppose we're there early, you know. Like we say, last weekend for the ladies' game, we were there at 12 o'clock in the day, like, and we got over there at night around 10 o'clock at night. So it is a long day, which is, as I said, it's great. It's great. We make great friends. I've made great friends through since I started. Like, you know, I stewarded in Killarney and I stewarded in Tralee, and we've all done further afield as well. But, you know, it's great.
Yeah. Joe, I suppose a lot of people listening tonight and saying, my God, some 5 hours beforehand the game, and you must have been talking all day or all night before you got out at all. But the reality is that you have to be there early, you have to be there on time. Is there kind of a team meeting, a gathering, you locate people at different points, or do you go through that kind of stuff?
Well, we do for next Saturday night now, Mick.
Talk us through next Saturday night now, that'd be very interesting.
For next Saturday night, the planning is going on here now with the stewards and one, like, those meetings now tonight, with the stewards and the member of the Garda Síochána, and everyone has been involved in this, because you're going to approximately maybe 12,000 to 14,000 people. This is going to be a sellout. I would think so now, like, because it's a vital game for Kerry and it's a vital game for Armagh, like. And so, like, we're hoping tonight will be fine. We wouldn't have looked, there were some nights there last year and everything, they were very bad nights, but we're lucky the match is on at 5 o'clock in the evening, and so we'll have a likely daylight hour in it. But we'll be in early. Everything will be planned. Stewards will be get the destination where to go. Now we're blessed. We have a good lot of stewards. They're very good stewards now. A lot of them, very nice fellas, and they'll come nice and early and everything. And you tell them what to do, and they'll look after the where they're appointed and things like that. So No, it's hard to get stores as well. You must remember this. It's free. There's no one getting paid for it. It's voluntary stuff, like. They're amazed that they're here, lucky that they have the likes of the three of us here, like. We're going down and we don't get nothing for it. They know what I mean, like. But we enjoy it. And as I say, for Saturday night, we'll be looking out for all this parking. Mick will be looking after upstairs and Mike is inside the restroom. And when the teams are coming out, we have to watch if Mike will give it an eye that the teams come. We can't have the two teams coming out together, mm-hmm. because they're coming out like a bunch of cattle coming out into the field, like, you know. And if they hit you, then...
And a string day.
Oh, they're good. Over, bye-bye, like. but those things are always under control, and we have good people in place with all these things, like, which is very important now. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of people, before I forget it, is Eamon O'Sullivan there now? Mm-hmm. Oh, Eamon is one of the best men who could meet, a gentleman, out and out, when he was Secretary of the Kerry County Board, and he was PRO, and involved in the GA all his life. And he took on this role as the Secretary of Austin Sex Park. He's a brilliant man, a lovely gentleman out now, mm-hmm. to talk to. He's everything organised, he's everyone playing. Now, Tony O'Keefe was there that time, unfortunately. We want to wish him well. He gets sick now, he's, yep. you know, when he was out. Yep. And we have Liam Lynch coming, is as fair. And you know, we have a lot of the officers of the county board involved as well, like, you know. But as I say, stewards are very important. If we don't have stewards, you can't run a match, like, you know, mm-hmm. because we have gates to look at and everything. But as I say, you know, when you're doing stewarding, then you go away for you do a course and you get a cert for this for all this and health and safety and all this stuff, like, and all this big stuff now, like, and all. Yeah. But, as I say,
I suppose it has to be big stuff now. I suppose with so much litigation and people kind of, I suppose the insurance has gone through the roof. You have to have everything, all the boxes ticked up.
We just did a course there recently in Killarney, a few weeks ago for stewarding, you know, and you have to have this course done, all, like, yeah. And I was talking to him and there during the week, and we're going to try and get one in Tralee as well for the lads from the Tralee section of the thing, like, you know. Good it stuff. Is important, that, yeah, and it's a refresher, like, it sort of you might forget stuff that it refreshes your memory of what to do on with especially with kids and stuff like that, like, so lost kids and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's all new stuff, wasn't,
you know,
happening
in today's world. It's a different scene than when we started.
100% paramount.
Different scene, you know. Yeah.
Michael, we were talking off here about your specific role. I mean, Joe is the man that leaves the cattle out there in the summer, you know, hopefully he doesn't get trampled on the way out, and he knows. But you're the guy that opens the pin and lets them out in the dressing rooms. Talk to me about the role of the dressing room. Obviously, you're the guy that says, Team A, it's time to go, or Team B, it's time to go. Do you ever get kind of managers sitting inside, despite the knocking, they're not listening to you?
At times, the linesman, if the linesman comes in, if he doesn't see, I'll wave to the linesman if they don't react to me, like if I get no answer. The linesman will come in, then he'll open the door and walk straight in and tell him out. You're like, you have to, because some teams would stay inside, have to be
able to drinking lots of tea, will they?
No, but it's an important job, because I'm at the front door when the teams come. I tell them which dressing room they're in, and when it's a senior county, they use both dressing rooms each. They have two dressing rooms each, one's for the physio and one for the team. And as when they go out in for the match, the referee have their own dressing room there as well. I have to make sure that all the windows are closed and all the doors are locked.
For safety, obviously.
For safety, and that's why I stand always. I never go out in the field. I always stay inside in the tunnel in case anyone, because 9 times out of 10, the team goes out in the field. They're getting ready for the match. If you lock the door too early, there's one coming running in, I forgot my gloves. I forgot this, I forgot that.
So you can't go too far away.
Can't go anywhere.
So you've got the rough industry. You don't see much games at all, do you?
Well, anyone that's on television, I tape them all and I go home at night and I sit down and watch.
You can see Joe Wallace opening gates and his shiny jacket. Mick Flavin, you're up with the crowd. I suppose you're down on the pitch, you're in the dressing room. You're more in the stand when it gets busy and the whole lot. stands tend to get loud and vocal and the whole lot. People arriving late and kind of people pushing in people. Do you ever kind of, I won't say end up being the peacemaker, but is there a bit of common sense used at times for
without
people?
Without a doubt, yeah, without a doubt. Like you'll meet all sorts of people and, you know, people become late, and especially, like, as I said again, in the county final there, or, you know, we say, like, next Saturday night now, you'll have a certain part of the stand roped off, and people will come up and they'll be saying, like, why can't I get in there and stuff, and you have to, as I said, people come late, but yeah, I don't know, like, we
have you an answer rehearsed for that in your head, or
look, I suppose you learn as you go along.
Yeah,
you know, like it's experience as well, and you learn how to deal with people. You know, there you'll get all sorts of excuses and things why.
Go on, give us one. Give us one excuse.
But like it's I don't know. It's just you have to learn to deal with them, and if issues arrive, you know, and you have to keep calm.
Mm-hmm.
Keep calm, you know. Some people will try and rile you up, you know, but not a lot, but a few will, and you have to be able to hold your head and sort of pass it off. Like,
well, I suppose you have to keep the calmest of all of them, no matter what's going on around you, because you know,
people are good. In fairness, people, 99% of the people are spot on, you know, like people will take you at face value, and if you tell them, look, it's ticket only or whatever it is, a lot of them will accept that, like, and they'll move on, you know. But I suppose on a fine day, it's great. If the day is raining, the stand can get a bit overcrowded, all right, you know. Everybody wants to be in the stand in, and then that's when the pressure comes on a little bit, you know. But again, I suppose for the summer games, that's very rare, you know, very rare.
Yeah. Joe, you, the players, of course, I suppose coming out in the field is fine. Coming back off the field, I suppose, you know, that tunnel is tight, it's narrower at the best of times. You can kind of maybe tame them off, because Michael will let one gang out ahead of the other gang. But on the way back in at half-time, they do tend to come in fairly good and lively. Any belts of shoulders or things like that?
I usually stand at the gate, and as you know, there's a step coming in, like, and I try and tell them to stay calm down as well. But you know, but they're under pressure coming in as well. Like they're all hyper and all this. Like, you have to be careful and mind yourself, like, you know, because as you know, it's not, and you have 30 players coming in plus coming in, and you know, there's their pressure big. If they hit you and they're not going to hurt you, like, you know. And if we're in a bit of a which we don't have too often, is a bit of skimmies in the tunnel and all that, but very seldom it happens. But if we did have that, you just like Mike said, common sense prevails. Like, you don't get inside in the building, you'll wait until the kind of cameras on and they're afraid they'll deal with them or something like that.
If there is a skirmish in the tunnel, and we've seen it in other places up the country, we've seen them all on television, they run off, and some of the best league games are the bit of skirmish in the tunnel and the whole lot, and the media are on top of it straight away, and we're all identifying who was in and who was out. Is it your role to separate them, or is it just your role to kind of just
if stewards are there, but that might never happen, like, but that could happen, like, fingers, like. But if it did happen, you have no hope, like, you know. You just,
it's rare, like, I've never seen it happen, really, in a skirmish, you know. I suppose the field itself is quite close to the stand.
Yes.
You know, and we did at one stage, we kind of put a step from the there's a step coming off of the field down. That didn't work either, because it is too close, and you're coming onto concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Your shoes are wet. But luckily enough, to date, we haven't had any major accident there ever, really, like, sort of they seem to get through it all right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, it's pretty close. There's no lot you can do with it.
No.
It's pretty close to the stand.
Yeah. Of course, the other thing, of course, they are, besides, I suppose, J.S. Stewart, you're all GMing, aren't you?
All GMing, yeah.
And he all came from different corners of the place as well.
Yeah. Involved with clubs. Yeah. And I was involved with my club, Belly, you know, for years. I was involved in the North Kerry Football Board, you know, and then the stewarding came up and started doing it. And I suppose the stewarding was great during the pandemic for us, like. Yeah. We were able, like, even that you had no
the rule was still there, like,
closed doors.
Yeah.
We were able to get out, and, you know, we were meeting the players, and it was a great outlet for us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm retired, we're all retired, and sort of to be able to get out of the house and go into a game, like, sort of, it was fantastic.
It's amazing.
I suppose, he played it, we all played it, you know, and we know, you know, on and off the field how it works, like, you know.
Yeah.
I refereed. I won a county championship in hurling, and I have refereed county championships in hurling as well. So I know the story and how it works, like, you know. But the four other figures, you know, we forgot to mention, I suppose, is John Mahoney. He's all caretaker.
Oh, God, he's the real boss.
The real boss, yeah.
Oh, my God, he even puts me in my place.
Oh, geez, he's an able boy, you know, I don't know for nothing. But just to pay a compliment, he does a great job up there as well, like, you know, in all fairness to him. But I'll go back to the COVID, the time we were doing the COVID, that we had the music and out there, and I thought the Dublin people, you know, we had Dublin Mayo there, like, you know, I thought that were two fantastic evenings above. It will always live in my memory, you know, and I knew not as well as I do that what took place up there and everything. But it was, you know...
You were caught dancing, weren't you, while you were supposed to be working?
With
the Rose of Tralee. Look, you weren't fired by Leona Twist that night, to be honest with you. I think she came down to give out to you and you decided to go dancing.
I said to her, they got her the job in Europe.
Well, she was a lovely person. We had a great dancer, and Leona Twist, and we danced it. But, you know, Liam O'Connor was brilliant in the music as well. But I thought those things added to the night as well, like, you know, and you know, there was something about that, those two nights. I'll always think about them, like, you know, mm-hmm. And I said, something.
And that's what it should be. It should be an occasion, Joe, shouldn't it? I mean, I know it's the football and the game. Of course, our Armagh game will be an occasion next night. There's a bend on there at 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock is nice and early as well. People will come in big numbers. But it's a great occasion, you know, people are there, it's a Saturday night in Tralee, and it adds to the magic of the football too, doesn't it?
Oh, it does, it livens up the atmosphere and things like that, like, you know. And
now, with all your careers, lads, none of you played against Mick O'Connell, bar one man, the quietest man here. Tell us about that.
And I played in goal for the Marys in 1967.
Yeah. And just in case nobody knows who the Marys are, because they're a small club below there in
St. Mary's in Castlevania. Famous footballers came out of there.
Absolutely. You played in goal against Mick,
yeah. 1967. I was home on holidays from England, and Lord mercy, Mick Duhigg, he was the manager, yeah? And I met Mick up to him. He says to me, "We're short, will you play?" I said, "Really?" So I did. And Lord mercy, Christy O'Neill, you know Christy. Christy played, Michael Brennan. Ned Fitz,
Morris's
father,
yes.
Played Eric Murphy.
Oh, yes.
They were all on that on that team.
Right.
But
did you win or lose?
We lost by 2 points, but they didn't score any goal.
There we go. That's why you're in charge of dressing rooms. You don't leave anybody in or out. Come here. Talk to about Belly Dunha back in the day. Or maybe not too far back.
Yeah, we had, I suppose... the last time I was in this studio here, I was with the late Eddie Dowling and Mick Finucane.
Very good.
And the late Weeshie Fogarty. I brought the lads in to do an interview here. Like, I suppose, yeah, down through the years, we've had, you know, Jordy Connor, Captain Kerry back in the years, and we had Johnny Bunnan, you know, Liam Flaherty, Robert Bunnan, Captain of the Kerry Miners in 75. So it is a traditional club, all right, you know. Just a rural parish again, but, you know.
Yeah, rural parishes, I suppose there's a magic about it when you're a rural parish and you have a county man. It probably means a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate, really. Like, we've had some great county men in at the moment. We have Jason, you know, and doing well at the moment. And I suppose, again, from a club point of view, it's hard to have a county man because...
Yeah,
you know, the man is busy. You only get him for championship games, you know, but up to now the club is going pretty well. You know, a good strong club at the moment. You know,
Hartford going pretty well.
Well, we win the championship.
Don't be critical now, my God! Don't be critical.
I know we're struggling at the moment on the field team. We've a lot of players playing at the County Hall, and
talk to me about that. Actually, I mean, that wouldn't happen in Castlevania or Ballydunahoe, trying to divide the hurlers and the footballers. Is it a difficult gig? Is it a difficult job?
It is. It is very difficult. Look, I was 10 years involved now. I was lucky. We were very successful. We won 3 All Ireland.
But you see the way he slipped that in there. We won 3 All Ireland.
Cheeky.
You mentioned about 4 players. This fella played against Mick O'Connell, but we won 3 All Ireland there. Yeah.
Well, the holding is a big factor in effort as well. There's not all about it. We've two clubs there. We have a holding club. which is Joe Hussey is the chairman of it, and I was chairman until last year. I stepped down. I was at the getting 9 or 10 years of it. It was time to go, like, and so Martin Fellas took it over. So, like, we're the hauling is a serious problem to us to try and keep it going. We're lucky that we're under all the time under pressure when the season starts. Have we this player? And this player's going to be able to carry hurlers, and should he be playing with us? Naturally, he should be playing with us, like. But unfortunately, he's about to carry hurlers, and he weakens the team. The same applies to the hurling, Nagel and all them. They're down players as well, like. But like, he really, really hits us, hurts us big time, like. Especially with a dual club, like, you know. But we get over it. We have knowledge. We're kind of accustomed to it, you know. When the football club was formed, I was chairman there for holding a football club that time, and we formed the club in 1978. I saw an opening there, and because there was a lot of there was very little immigration at that time, you know, in our Kerry at that time, and in our particular, because we were the hope of the town, we're near the town, like, you know, and that were people like walking to Lee, like, you know, so we were lucky, but we formed the football club. We have been very successful, and we have great people involved in it, and a lot of men passed away, got help us, and look, this is the way it is. We had no other choice, but we were lucky. We were only kicking a ball away from beating Fosso and Castleford this year, last year, and so a small thing, we'd have turned it around. We could have been All Ireland champions instead of Fosso.
So you won three of them. What were the fourth one for, Michael? Of course, you mentioned St. Mary's, of course, and you travelled away up from there, of course, into Tralee. You were in Tralee a long time, weren't you?
I'm in Tralee. I came back from London in 1973. 50 years in Tralee. But
Who did you throw your allegiance with?
I was always a Sir Kelly man.
Dear.
about you. But I was going to be in the stacks. So
the stacks. Okay. Fair play to you. Come here to me. Jay is a huge part of your family because your son is quite a busy man, isn't he?
He is.
Tell us about him.
Brendan, he's a sports photographer in Dublin, and he has the world travelled. He's at it now since 1994. He started in 1994. When he was, I used to bring him to matches, and he was fascinated always by Sean Cleary. And I one day he was talking about camera, and I didn't know the first thing about the cameras. So I brought him down to Sean Cleary. And he went in and he explained to Sean, and Sean said to me, he said, look, I'll be going to Dublin in a week's time, I'll get him a camera. And he got him a German camera, a Praktika. And he still has that camera to his home in the house, but that's what started him off in it. And when he was in the green then, he wasn't much good at football. The Christian brother, below the green, Brother Doody, I think was his name. When the green school were playing in college football, he was carried as the official photographer.
Wow. So that's where it began?
That's where it all began.
My God. And he's won prizes the world over now, hasn't he?
He has, yeah.
Go on, do a bit of South Kerry boasting there. Go on.
He has. We have...
I thought he was taking the pictures.
When he goes abroad, he brings his mother back a fridge magnet. Ooh. And we have just over 100 of them now open. I got a big white board up on the wall from every corner of the earth, nearly.
And of course, he's done Olympics
done for at least four Olympics, if not five. He's done World Cups. He's been in New Zealand with the Lions. A couple times he was in South Africa with the Lions. He's been all over Europe. He's been in America. He's done the Ryder Cup. I have t-shirts, I have caps.
Dress yourself the world over.
I could be naked over him.
All over the world.
That's amazing.
But he loves it, like.
Yeah. And he's a top professional. He really is good. Of course, I do know him quite well. But he's with another man from South Kerry, isn't he?
Oh, he is, Stephen McCarthy. And Stephen is out in Spain at the moment with the ladies' soccer.
Yeah.
They have a summer camp out there.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
So proof be told, Joe, if you're not good at football, you could be a photographer and you could still be following the sports all over the world.
I have a camera there, and I have a phone on the camera, and I say I was taking a snap. It was the other side to go. my vision wouldn't be the best for it.
Yeah. Come here, to be interesting that you mentioned that now, but the whole world now has gone phones and the whole lot. Are you conscious of the fact that fellas like me are taking pictures of you dancing at the odd time?
Well, that was a good move for you. You got the publicity of it.
But we'll say, Michael.
I have one story I'll tell you. Early last year, we were playing Mayo in Tralee on a Saturday night, and it was TG Cahill were there. And I was standing aside, I had the mask on inside and the thing, and I had it down like that, it was below my nose. And TG Cahill, when the two teams were going out, the camera was shining at the teams coming out. My daughter was living above in Cork, she was married in Cork, and she was watching the match on television. She spotted that I had the mask over my nose.
Oh, no.
She took a photograph off the television and brought it down to her mother.
You were going to get it from the wife when you came home.
I said, could it happen anywhere from Ireland?
Isn't that amazing?
And I was inside at the back of the tunnel, like. Which is amazing, isn't it?
You were well spotted. Mick Flam, were you ever caught on camera doing something?
I suppose we were. it is a different era, all right, like, sort of. You'd have to be
more conscious.
You'd have to be more conscious of it, yeah. Like, there's no lot you can do now, like, you know, the camera's going, you know, and I seen it there in the stand. There's all sorts of photos being taken, and they're on constantly, like, sort of, even during the game, like, the cameras are on, you know, so you have to be...
It's a part of the world that wasn't part of the world 10, 15 years ago. I was working and
travelling up and down the country, like, sort of, you know, you might stop in the motorway for a phone to ring home, that you'll be home at such a time, and the phone could be, there could be coins stuck in it, you have to go on to the next town, you know. But, it is, you know...
Change your world.
I wouldn't be great with it, like, but I have grandkids that could nearly make them talk. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's
a different world. Come here to me, we're running out of time, we're in injury time, but there is one man at least, maybe other men as well, if you want to mention him, but the late Maspalan, Joe Wallace, I mean, I miss him terribly going in the gate.
The only one?
Myself, Maspalan, you know, I know him for years now, and we were great friends, and... The funny thing about Master Milan, he never drove a car, as far as I know, because I used to carry him everywhere, like, you know.
He did.
And we used to go here and go there. A true gentleman. We're very sorry off missing, because, like, he was, when I took over Castlelea, he was the groundsman in Castlelea, and when I was appointed to take over Castlelea in Sean Welch's time, when he became chairman of the Kerry County Board, and when he asked me, he says, will you look after it? I just said, I was working a bit of time now for it, but he says, I'm two passing out every day, he says, can you give a look in and move in? So I did, and I took on Massey, and Massey was there for until not missing the man, he's did over 3 years now, mm-hmm. He was missed in Austin Sykes Park. He was number one. He was in Austin Sykes Park before he came to Castlelea.
He was a friend to everybody, really.
Yeah. Friend to everyone. And he was a gentleman out and out. And I used to love going out. I used to pick him up to go to the old functions and GA functions. And
of course,
and,
yeah.
And then I'd bring him along, and he used to love it. And
yeah. And we can't forget the late Vincent Lennon.
Vincent Lennon.
You know,
yeah.
Vincent. And if I can, I'd like, at the moment, as one of our stewards, Mike Slattery out in Ballydoffin, we'd like to wish Mike all the best. Yeah. Mike was a great old crack, and great man to tell a story and have a bit of camaraderie with.
It's the kind of job, Mick, that, or Mike, even though my son, Mike's and Michael's, no, and Joe the Hall, but it's the kind of job that you get very close to people and become great friends.
Without a doubt, you know, and like, as I said, like, I suppose the GA itself, is, you know, since I got involved in the GA all my life, I've made so many friends through it. You'd make a few enemies as well, you know. I did a bit of referee one time, and you'd make enemies, but like they'd never last. You're always, there's no man out there that I can't talk to, and it's great, like.
And Michael,
I had been with Moss for 37 years. We'd meet at Bellona Cross every match. We'd walk over, stroll away over, come back after. And in the 37 years, we never had an argument. He was the nicest man you could meet, and I miss him every day to know that.
Yeah, I think we'll end on that, because I think it's right to give Boss Bland the final word tonight on Terrace Talk.
You know, when he was in Castlelea, that time he was looking out, you know, he lived at the other side of Castlelea.
Yeah.
He never... you say it would take him a long time to walk all around to come up to the field, like.
Right.
But he had this old leather lad, there's no, something gone on. I say, how he would get off the light, he usually climb up the leather, up the wall. He'd sit on top of the wall there, and he'd pull up the leather, and they're coming down the other side of it.
Okay,
but I remember I opened the, a door for him to put him on. Just, I don't think he'll ever use the door. He used to use the leather, like.
He was a man that liked danger, up and down the wall. So there you go, an interview that we held on the 20th of February with Joe Wallace, Michael Moran and Mick Flavin, and there was a great reaction to that. Great crack on the night as well. And a big shout out to all the stewards all over every GAA ground, I suppose, throughout the country for the great work they do. Now, after the break, we have a real rare interview as I caught up with Pat McCarty of Churchill, who of course played midfield for Kerry in the 70s.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, very special interview we held during the year with Pat McCarty of Churchill, who of course played midfield for Kerry in the 1970s. He was down on holidays and I caught up with him. Joining us now is of course Pat McCarty, two-time winner with Kerry. Pat, it's great to be kind of home again tonight in your own parish, I suppose.
Well, fantastic. Anyway, I come down maybe four or five times during the year. I'm always a Churchill man at heart, and there was an organised event tonight, so I was asked to come down, and there was a presentation made for people that won medals, and I happened to be one of them, and lucky enough to be one of them, and I definitely enjoyed coming down, yeah.
It's great to be recognised by your own people. I know there's lots of, I suppose, awards throughout your career and the whole lot, but it's a little bit more special when you kind of get back to Churchill, and they're talking tonight, of course, about St. Brendan's players. What's your memories of playing with St. Brendan's?
We always sort of played well, and we were unlucky in the sense that maybe three times that we played, maybe the team that went on to win a county championship, and we never sampled maybe semi-final day or final day when I was playing, but they sampled it afterwards. They were beaten in the last, was it 2 years ago they were beaten, and then they were beaten about maybe 12-14 years ago as well, yeah. But I never had the experience of playing in a county final, yeah, or a semi-final for that matter, yeah, yeah.
But you've had experience, of course, playing in All-Ireland finals. 1975 was a very special year for you. You made your debut against Tipperary. You won 3-13-1-9. I think you were playing in the forwards that day, not midfield.
Well, it goes back a bit further than that. I played in 73 with Kerry, with Mick O'Dwyer actually, but I was illegal. I was playing football in Kildare and playing with Churchill, obviously, here as well. And then sort of I got straightened out, and then I got a call up to play with Kerry in 75. And lucky enough, we went all the way, won the All-Ireland. Mm-hmm. And that was actually the highlight of my football career anyway, you know.
And of course, you didn't just win an All-Ireland, you won an All-Ireland playing midfield, which is kind of one of the marquee places to play as a Kerry man.
Well, at that time it was sort of more important, I think, than now, for the simple reason it was the goalkeeper kicked out the ball, obviously, as we all know at that time. It was always hanging around the midfield, and the midfielders were sort of maybe the primary obtainers of the ball, and they played into the forwards. Now it's a different kind of a game, but centre field, I liked it, and it suited me, and sometimes I had great games, another time I didn't have a great game, yeah.
Well, so of course you had a good game, of course, in 1976, a lot of people, the Munster final in 1976, it still jumps out, a big score, a game that went to all the way to extra time. What's your memories of that day?
It was a replay, obviously. The drawn game was low scoring enough, and the opposite happened in the replay down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. The two games were in Páirc Uí Chaoimh because I think Kerry owed Cork two games because of the reconstruction of Páirc Uí Chaoimh at that time. And it was great. I thought we had lost it at one stage. I was convinced. I didn't realise that sort of the goal that was disallowed by Cork, I thought it had been given. And when the final whistle went, I thought we had lost. And I always remember Mikey Shee had a ball up in there and went over the bar, and I thought we were beaten by a pint or 2 pints. And somebody said to me, it's going to go to extra time. So then extra time came, and I suppose our fitness carried us through, and we prevailed in the end. end, and we won the semi-final, but we were beaten by Dublin then, obviously, in the final, that memorable game as well.
Yeah, of course, that was a great game as well. Come here, fast forward a small bit, of course, after your Kerry career, you went back to Kildare, you lined out for Sallins. What drew you back there? What was it?
Well, when I was playing with Kerry, Sallins was always my football club, because I had to make a decision, either Churchill or Sallins. So I chose Sallins because I was living up there at the time as well, and I used to hurl with Artlock as well. I liked the hurling. And I just played with Sallins, and I got called up with Kerry, and that was it. Sallins was my club, Kerry was my county.
Mm-hmm. And of course you reunited with Mick O'Dwyer sometime in the mid-90s?
I had the privilege actually of playing with Mick O and officiating with him and playing under him as well, and I was involved for a couple of years up there, and we got to the All-Ireland final in 98, which is still a sort of a sore point from a Kildare point of view. In my point of view, we had done all the hard work, and we were beaten by a good Galway team. As it turned out afterwards, they won another All-Ireland in 2001, beat us in 98, you know. Yeah.
Just for our listeners, I mean, the time Mico went, and I mean, we were looking at some television, and there was crowds of people all over Kildare. He was like the Messiah. What was it like on the ground at the time?
Unreal. I think, you know, I mean, I often said it afterwards that if Kildare win that far again, they should go away to the Iron Islands or somewhere like that, you know, because everybody got involved in it, and there was flags and buntings, everything, and you know, it was very accessible for the media to come down to Newbridge rather than to go down to Galway to sort of interview Galway players. So I think that maybe didn't help us, you know, being in the limelight and in the papers every day and so on. So I think if Kildare ever got that far again, the farther away from Kildare, the better. To prepare for the final.
Of course, like I said, you're home tonight, of course. Do you still watch the matches? Do you still watch Kerry?
Oh, I would, yeah. Oh, God, I would, yeah. I go to the games now. I've gone to two of the Kildare games so far, you know, but I go to Tralee tomorrow night now to see Kerry playing Armagh, you know. I still go to the games, you know, but I'm not actively involved anymore, you know. Yeah, but I'm a fan now at this stage, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Listen, Pat McCarthy, thanks very much for joining us tonight in Terrace Talk. We really appreciate it.
Not at all, my pleasure.
And that, of course, was Pat McCarthy, one of the finest midfielders to play for Kerry, and a real rare interview. Real interesting as well to hear what he said about Kildare and his time with Mick O'Dwyer as well back in the 90s. Now, up next is news, and we'll talk to you after the break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home. Breaking down the weekend's sporting action. This is Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
And you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk here on the 1st of January. Just a quick reminder that this show is pre-recorded, so don't phone in or don't send a text, because we won't be here to read them out this evening for you, as we look ahead to what happened in April. And it was a very special journey for the Kerry senior ladies footballers getting to Croke Park. But that journey began, believe it or not, back in April when they actually won Division 1 of the National League. And we caught up with Dara Long and Lorraine Scanlon.
Darrell, I suppose Division 2 last year, Division 1 this year, what's the secret?
Blood, sweat and tears, Donal. A lot of effort has gone into this group for 4.5 years now. I think we've 10 or 12 of our minor group that we had initially when we started this journey. Special feeling today. You know, did anyone see that performance coming? I suppose internally we always knew the girls were capable of really blowing a team away and dominating a game really from the first minute to the last. I think in every aspect of the game today, I think we were first to the ball, and the attitude, the effort was top class today. And to finish out after what 31 odd years and get a Division 1 title back to Kerry is massive, and look, we're just absolutely over the moon. Yeah.
Everyone will look at the scores and the goals and everything, but the bedrock was the defence. They turned over Galway a good few times early in the first half, and that kind of set the tempo of the game as well.
It did, yeah. Look, the defence was brilliant, but personally I think our defence started from 13-14-15. I think we put Galway's kickouts, we put them under savage pressure. I think the girls had them at 6 and 7s, especially in that first half. And look, that gives the girls back the field a couple of seconds that we need to get set and get our structures in place. And you're dead right. I think Eilish Lynch, did Kayleigh Cronin get player of the match?
Yeah,
like, that girl could tug out for the Kerry Senior Men's next week. She's that good. And yeah, look across the line, Kieran Murphy, Cotley, and Seamus Sherwood, Aisling O'Connell. Look, we've three all-stars back there. And they're a phenomenal bunch. And I think, look, yeah, you're right, our backs set a tone, but I think our defending from 13, 14, 15 all the way back really, really set the tone there today.
And Croke Park's become a home for Kerry in recent times, thanks to you. How important was it, Hasbeck, being back in Croke Park, having been in the All-Ireland final last year?
Yeah, it was huge. It was something, I think Aisling O'Connell spoke about it during the week. It's something very familiar to us now. I think two and a bit years ago when we came here, Mead handed our so-and-sos to ourselves. It was a big learning day for us, and I think the games we've played since Armagh, Mayo, the All-Ireland final last year and today, our routine and our travel day and our morning of the game has become very familiar to us, and it's something that doesn't faze the girls anymore. And yeah, while there wasn't a massive crowd here today, Croke Park and the awe of Croke Park can still get to some girls, and even young Amy Harrington, our first run out there today, like, did it faze her? Not a bother. She should have scored. Look, she dropped it short, but look, we put that down to the exuberance of youth. But look, I think she got the calmness from the rest of the group being so familiar with the surroundings up here today, and look, it's definitely something that's going to stand us going into the future.
Yeah, I suppose, look, you had a tough call there with the goalkeeper. You had an All-Star nominee from last year, and you had Mary Ellen Bulger who started today. That was a tough call, but it worked out very, very well. I thought Mary Ellen's kick was very, very good.
Yeah, look, Kira Butler has been fantastic for us for the last couple of years, and look, this is no long-term call by us. Kira got injured in a challenge game before the first round of the National League, and look, it gave Mary Ellen her chance, something she's waited 3 years for, and to be fair to the girl, she didn't put a foot wrong, and she played four games, Kira played three, and it was such a marginal call. It was probably 51-49% kind of a call. The two girls are exceptional. When we first came into this group, it was probably an area that we really needed to work on to get not one keeper, but two really good keepers, and I think we found that, and look, I'm delighted for Mary Ellen. I think she's been really focused for the last couple of days, and I think that kick out in the first half that she dropped short of the 21 but was so switched on that sprinted out, collected, and off we went. You know, again, I think she played brilliantly, and she was a real calming influence back there.
Your ability to get goals in this league has stood you again, 5 today.
Yeah, look, it's something that we work on the whole time. It's just something that kind of comes for us. I think it's from our movement right from the girls at the back all the way up the field. I think the off the shoulder running, the cuts, the loops, look, everything that we do practice, it's not particularly just to get goals, but it's to create those opportunities, and we're very fortunate that we have the likes of Hannah Louise, Shifra, Carmody, Anna, Lorraine Scanlon here next to me to be able to finish off those opportunities. So look, as something that we try to coach and train and get into these girls is to create those opportunities up to them to take it. And look, we probably could have had a couple of more goals there today, but 5 goals on the biggest day of the year so far is very satisfying.
And is this just the start of the journey? I mean, championship 2 weeks time, like, you know, you'd be looking at that with huge confidence now.
Look, what a Division 1 title is going to do to this group is going to make us 10 foot tall, probably be another target on our back, you know, going into the championship in 2 weeks' time. But look, we'll enjoy the next couple of days. I think these girls have thoroughly deserved it from that first Saturday in November in Banna Beach. We had a little video of it there last night and brought back a lot of memories of what this work or what this success is built on. And we're going to enjoy it. The girls have thoroughly deserved it. And we look forward to the Munster Championship. It's a new competition for us. We start again from zero, and hopefully we can be successful in that as well.
And you nice time in Texas?
Great time in Texas, yeah.
Lorraine, congratulations. I suppose it's a very special day for you as well. You can finally tell your mum that you're a winner in Croke Park.
Yeah, I suppose a long time coming. I think we haven't been in a Division 1 final since 1991. So, yeah, I should say she wasn't even thinking of me at that stage. So, but it's great to, as I said, get a result on one of the biggest days here.
It was a hugely impressive performance from start to finish. Did you know that you had that performance in you as a team? I mean, it's a huge score. It's a massive win. It's probably one of the biggest Division 1 wins in an awful long time for a team. Did you know you had that in the locker?
I think we always had a belief in ourselves that we could pull out a performance like that. We're just happy that it was today that it came off. I mean, like, going into the game, we knew that Galway were very dangerous. You know, they're a very strong running team down the middle, so I suppose that was something we had looked at. And then I suppose, look, pressing their kick-outs, and I think our forwards worked really well there in the first half. They turned over a lot of ball, and that kind of that set the tone for the rest of the game. We got a kind of few nice scores off that, and then our backs had some phenomenal turnovers there. I think we turned them over 5 times in the first half, you know, just by stopping up their runs. So like, that's a great kind of pressure release for us as well, you know.
How much of an enjoyment is that for a midfielder to know that your backs are winning ball, they're getting you on the ball straight away? I mean, normally the midfielders are kind of tracking back, trying to defend as such, but you've really got a defensive unit that are well able to take care of themselves.
Oh no, massive defensive unit back there, and as you see, like, Kayleigh there kind of runs the show, and she's well supported by like Alicia and Murph from the back, and then you have like Ash Connell, like a massive like attacking wing back, and Caught like as well, and Image and holding centre. Like, there's massive like strength in that back line, as you said. We've full faith in them back there, you know, and they're very organised. They have a system, they stick to that system, and they play it off to a tee then.
Mm-hmm. There was a time that Lorraine Skillen was the young person on the team. You're moving up a little in status, but how great is it to share this moment with the likes of Louise and Caught and all those that you've played with from minor up?
I suppose we've had a lot of disappointments together, so you know, it's great to share days like these together as well. We've had, as I said, a few tough days here, but it's massive now to be able to, as I said, compete a Division 1 final here today, and we're just delighted. We're over the moon, and it's about to do with that group of girls and the younger group of girls. I think like it's a very special group we have here in Kerry, and the younger crew are, you know, a massive like boost to this team, and they bring loads of energy, and you know, they keep their heads up.
Is it important, or do you think, I know you won Division 2 here last year, to win a big final here in Crowley?
I suppose Division 2 final set us up for, you know, the championship last year, and it's the same again this year now. Like, this Division 1 final, it's just going to set us up for championship. So like, I think we're out now and the week after next in the Munster Championship. So I suppose, as we said, like, we'll enjoy maybe the next few days, but then it's back to work again, and kind of getting our work together now for the next few weeks, next few months again.
And there you go, a very happy Dara Long and Lorraine Scanlon. Why wouldn't they be happy? Lorraine went on to win an All-Star, and Dara got him to the All-Ireland final as well. Up after the break, though, we change from Naas football to Camogie.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
And you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk. Just before the break, we were talking ladies football and their fantastic win in the National League. But the Camogie team also captured the Division 2 title, and we caught up with Pat Ryan and Patrice Diggin.
Pat, first of all, congratulations. A campaign that started in Fitzgerald Stadium ended up in Croke Park. It was historic, and what are you feeling? What are your thoughts?
Just brilliant, like, so happy. Like, I mean, happy is the word, and you know, after people being through COVID and everything, like, what a day, like, what a day for the young people, young girls that are great ambassadors for Kerry. What a day in Kerry football yesterday. Like, I mean, the women of Kerry have led the way.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Was that something that was conscious this morning when you woke up? I mean, you stayed in the same hotel as the ladies footballers, you kind of followed the same path. You saw them win yesterday. Was that something that spurred you on as well?
I think more so for the girls, like, more than myself. Maybe the girls, I know they're shouting on the girls watching TV there yesterday, so I'd say more for the girls than myself, really. I just had to focus on my group. Maybe, you know.
Yeah. Focusing on the group, I mean, the first half, I suppose, it Kerry didn't perform as well as he could have performed. Still got in at half time, well in touch. Second half, though, I mean, what do you say at half time? Because it came out a far more open game as well.
Yeah, we just kept it simple. Like, we just, you know, we had a few home truths, simple talk, and we gave one or two instructions, and the guards responded. That's all. It was about a minute. We spoke for a minute, and that was it.
The Wanda Warriors, it always seems to respond with a bit of talking. Is Jackie Horgan, fantastic second half.
Yeah, well, she battled hard, and she was under a bit of pressure in them, but I said, look, go up midfield, jump the hurling. She did, she responded to it, and some great scores.
Yeah. Patrice, you were here in 2019. Is this a little bit more special?
Yeah, look, I suppose any day you walk out of Croke Park, it's probably a special moment. But I suppose the exciting thing about winning today, I suppose, is you're actually pushing up to Division 1B, and I think that's going to drive Kerry Camogie to another level. So I suppose, look, 2019, you're delighted you're getting to meet it, and now this year you're winning, you're getting into, you know, you're going up with the top ones now. So I suppose, look, it's a massive special day for Kerry Camogie to be entering into Division 1B next year.
Yeah, that's a huge point by Patrice Pett. I mean, it's Division 1 Kerry Camogie. I mean, God, I remember we weren't even allowed in divisions at 4 and 5 and down.
we're there now with a lot of great people that have brought us there as well. But where can we kick on from here?
Well, look, I suppose we had a load of minors with us today that, you know, can't play this year but came with us. They train with us all year, so it was like Christmas came for them this morning when they were heading to Croke Park. You see it in them. They were the first up for the breakfast. So I think that's really the future, really.
Yeah. Great scenes, of course, after the game. Fierce emotional scenes. These are real treasured moments for that journey, aren't they?
I suppose those are the wet nights we trained in Kerry. I think every night we've been there, we got drenched wet, and your dark nights driving home, even you're there. Like, this is the day. You can't buy this. You know, you can't buy this feeling. It's why you love hurling. It's why Pete Young said we're playing the greatest game in the world, and no disrespect to any other sport. And to be fair to Kerry, you know, there's room for football, there's room for camogie, there's room for hurling. And one thing about the media in Kerry, the coverage you give the girls is incredible, and that's massive, and they deserve it.
Patrice, it'll be an easy spin home to saving, will it?
Yeah, it'll definitely shorten the journey. I think if we were on the other side of that point, they're not getting into the bus today. But, like, you don't care if it takes you till tomorrow even to get home now, once that cup is on the front of the bus, we don't care.
How difficult, like, of a game was it for you to play? I mean, Croke Park, I mean, some people have been there before, but I mean, it's not a place that you play every day of the week. Does it take you a bit of time to settle into the pitch and the surrounds?
Yeah, I suppose, look, I know you can say it's just another field, it's just another game, but you're always coming out, it's breathtaking. Taking, you know, you walk out onto that field, the size of it, you know, even just the surroundings of it. You know, you could say you're going into Aston Stacks, into Fitzgerald Stadium, but not in comparison to the size you're going out there. And I suppose it probably just takes you that few minutes to get to the pace of the game, because it's just, you see yourself at the surface there, the ball is just pinging from end to end the whole time. So, you know, it takes time to get up to speed, I suppose. Yes.
A word on me, Pat. I mean, you played them so often now, I suppose you're getting well used to them. But they didn't give up at all, and they had a chance of a goal there just before full time or even in injury time. What were your thoughts about when that flashed?
Oh, geez, last for words, really, but they're a great team. They're a very good team, like, and you know, Ethan Noah dominated a lot, but fair to Patrice, quietened her in the second half. But you know, it's good an athlete as any sport out there, you know, and they're a very good team. We knew that. Oh my God, we did. They've been playing senior camogie a long time as well.
There you go. Excited Pat Ryan and Patrice Diggan discussing their National League success with the camogie team. Up after the break, we'll talk to two All-Ireland goalkeepers.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
And you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk. Up next, something very special in the build-up to the All-Ireland final. We caught up with Kerry All-Ireland winning goalkeepers Eamon Fitzgerald and Brian Kelly.
Eamon, thanks very much for joining us this evening. When I talk about 1972, I mean, for most people that sounds like it was 100 years ago, but it obviously wasn't. What are your memories of that day, particularly the first day?
Well, I remember, I suppose, the day before it in particular, where you really kept your focus on that and got away from all the hassle about tickets. And I'd warn any spectators out there, keep away from the players. They haven't enough of tickets to go around their own families, mm-hmm. where in-laws can become outlaws.
Very quickly.
On the day itself, your focus is on the game. Crowd never bothered me, and I'm sure it'll be the same with Brian, because you concentrate on your own game, and all you say to yourself really is, you know, I'll do the best I can on this particular day. First day we drew, great chance of winning it in the dying moments, and then in the second half, in the second game, awfully took over in the second half, particularly Willie Bryan.
A great player.
Fantastic player. And they, of course, had Tony McTague, tremendous free taker. And that's one of the pluses for Kerry going forward, to have someone like Sean Ishay. And then, of course, you have David Clifford, who can kick off his feet as well. And those are the memories I suppose I have. Loved to have won, but it didn't happen.
Well, sure, don't mind, sure. Plenty of fellas can't get to an All-Ireland final. You've got the two winning ones in 1 year. That's quite an achievement. Come here, you talk about the pressure for tickets in 72. I mean, we see today, I mean, God almighty, everybody's looking for a ticket. I mean, as telling Liam and John, I drove down from the Derry game and I wasn't at home 5 minutes and about eight fellas looking for tickets. I mean, I have no tickets out there for anybody anyway. But if that pressure is on someday and in clubs and the whole lot, I mean, it must be immense on players.
It is, yeah, and tonight, traditionally, it's when the clubs come together and distribute whatever tickets they have. I was talking to Derek Kinnead a couple of blinds ahead, and she said, that's a kind feeling that she gave you. And I said to Dara, how are you going to start out Monday night? And he says, ask Helga, tis the one time, he says, the chairman knows who to give the tickets to, and they may not always be the officers.
Oh my God, absolutely. The right people to get them, I suppose. Come here, no problem with tickets in the Legion. I heard you're all getting tickets.
I don't know what else.
And everything. Brian, welcome to the show. Come here, 2014, I mean, it's not as far back as 72, but still 10 years ago nearly. I mean, next year it'll be 10 years ago. Your memory's still fresh about it.
Yeah, geez, when you say it like that, no, time flies when you think about it. But yeah, like Eamon said, great memories. Just certain things, I think, just stick in your mind from the build-up, the train journey up, the team meetings, the tactical meetings before the night before the game. Just one thing about the game itself, I just remember the whole stadium being green and gold that day. Obviously, Donegal and Kerry were in the minors as well and in the seniors, so it was just a sea of green and gold that day. And like Eamon said, once the ball's thrown in, it's nearly like there's a sense of relief, because it's just down to work then, and you're focusing on your own game and the tactical side of things. But yeah, look, great memories, and yeah, memories for life. Mm-hmm.
Is it easy to settle down as a goalkeeper when you have to go down to, I suppose, the hill, I suppose, on that particular day? I suppose it was like, said, half Kerry, half Donegal, but I mean, there's the noise must be immense behind it.
Yeah, I suppose that day wasn't too bad, because half the crowd were your own crowd, and they'd have your back. But definitely when you're playing the Dubs, it's a different kettle of fish. You're trying to keep them as quiet as possible for as long as possible. But again, that's a challenge for Kerry now the weekend, to try and keep that hill quiet. And I'm sure that's what they're planning to do. But again, yeah, when they get their gander up and when the crowd gets behind them, it can be a cauldron up there.
Mm-hmm. Eamon, of course, the role of the goalkeeper has totally changed from 72 and, dare I say, 2014. Would you like to be in goal today playing this type of goalkeeping game? Were you the kind of guy that wanted to come out of goal and pass the half-back line and maybe the midfield?
I'm sure I'd love to be back in goal, but time moves on. Like, Brian's time is very different to when I was there. Brian has a great kick out, for example, and is very strategic now for the goalkeeper to kick it out. No goalkeeper kicked it out 50 years ago. But why should you? It felt like Donnie Sullivan, who kicked it longer than anyone I've ever seen anywhere. Did you know that the New York Jets wanted to hold on to him as a kicker? So you put down the ball and you got out of the way as well, of course, because there was no short kick out to Michael O'Connell or whoever was there. Eamon O'Donoghue, who was a big man, great player. That's probably the biggest thing. And Cluxton in particular changed that.
Yeah. Of course, those were the days of the fair contests, really. You know, both teams had 2 fellas midfield that were 6 foot five, 6 or 7, whatever it was, and the ball went down. Looking back at the way the game is played now, I mean, do you miss that sort of it when you're watching it, or does everything have to evolve in time and games move on and managers get smarter and cuter? And
well, I think the key word you said there, Donal, is evolves. Everything evolves and changes, and there have been changes, quite a few changes. Some of them I don't like. I'm delighted that we have a goalkeeper in Kerry who goes out as far as the maybe 35 metres, but no further. And we saw what happened up in the stadium there 2 years ago in the league match against Tyrone. The keeper from Tyrone came way out beyond the 50. Gavin White got a ball, he spotted it empty, and he chipped him for 40 yards. And the crowd loved to see the goalkeeper chipped.
Fair play to you, the Croaksman, remember, and the one time the Tyrone goalie went out and was chipped by a Croaksman. Come here, Brian, back to the game itself. I mean, Shane Ryan, obviously, you know him fairly well. Shane Murphy, obviously, you know well as well. What are they doing now on the build-up to the game? I mean, they're obviously strategically maybe going through kick-outs or learning different strategies, their whole lot. Or is all that learned now, this stage, and it's just second nature?
Yeah, I think at this stage of the season, you're probably just kind of recapping and fine-tuning. But like Eamon said, I don't envy the lads, because even in the last 10 years, the role has changed so much. Like, I remember going in training with Kerry the tail end of 2011, early 2012, and there was a mantra of like, we'll break even midfield on kickouts, or more or less win over half of your kickout and we'd fancy ourselves against anyone. Whereas these days, if you won 50% of your kickout, you wouldn't be winning the game, and you probably wouldn't have the jersey for the following week either inside in goal. So it's the game has evolved no end.
Is there a lot more pressure on a goalkeeper now to ensure that kick out? I mean, we all see the ones that you drop out to the 21 metre line, great job done, but there is the ones where teams will push up and there's a very narrow space to land the ball. Do you practice that at training, or is that
100%? I remember the week before the Dublin semi-final in 16, we landed up to training and Eamon Fitzmaurice had, I'd say, 25 massive Bose speakers behind the goal, and every kick out there was noise being blared out of the speakers. I'd say you would have heard it down by the town centre. But I think the proof is in the pudding. Like, you looked at the Derry game, 5 minutes to go, I think it was a draw game, and Derry lost 3 kick outs in a row, and all of a sudden Kerry were up 3 or 4 points. The kick out has gone huge. The position itself is under a massive microscope, and like that, it's all about momentum. Derry lost a bit of momentum at just the wrong time, and Kerry capitalised like great champions do.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Brian, just staying on that point, we talk about goalkeepers. I mean, obviously there's two Shanes. There's the Shane Murphy, Shane Ryan. Shane Ryan is the one at the moment. But being a sub-keeper, I mean, the next day, we're not saying it'll happen, but I mean, something could happen to your number one, and number 16 becomes number one, and he has to come in and he has to role play the whole lot. How difficult a role is that to play? I mean, obviously you were understudy for a while as well at different times and the whole lot, but is the goalkeeper's union, is it an actual thing?
I think it has to be, because at the end of the day, if you get thrown in, you have to be in the right headspace to perform, because if you're not, and if you're dwelling on other things, you're only going to let yourself down at the end of the day. Look, as we say, touch wood, nothing happens to Shane the weekend, but I'm sure if Shane Murphy's called upon, he'll be ready. He'll be working closely with Dermot Murphy and Brendan Keely inside there, and I'm sure he'll be ready to go. But as I say, it can be difficult being sprung off the bench. I have been myself in different times, and you have to be ready. You have to know your role. You have to be up to speed with tactics, kick-out signals, kick-out calls, when to use them, when not to use them. And no doubt the two Shanes will be ready for Sunday.
Absolutely. Come here. We were talking earlier today, and we were talking about 100 years ago, 1923. I mean, it seems like a hell of a long time ago. But you had a great story about Paul Russell.
Yeah, in fact, I think he's the forgotten man of Kerry football. He's an amazing character. He was 17 years of age in 1923, going down to the Sim here, the local college, and Frank Brady called out to him in Magnet View and said, you're on Sunday, Kerry versus Dublin, the All-Ireland. He had never been at a trial, never even saw a Kerry jersey, and when he went down to the Sim, the word had got out, and they got a half day for it. Dick Fitzgerald picked him. I don't know how he convinced the selectors, but anyway, even then, he played very well. They were beaten 1-5 to 1-3. But from then on, he had won 6 All-Irelands by the age of 26. Fantastic achievement. And amazingly, he played with 8 different counties, won 8 county championships, and he was legitimate. He was a guard. He trained the Waterford team, hurling team for the All Ireland, played with them and that. And he was acknowledged with one of the skills that has gone completely out of the game. I think Brian would know this in the present game. You never see a person now with a drop kick. Remember that? It was a huge feature. And Mick O'Connell always said it was the most delightful ball forever to catch. And I often asked Mico, like, what was the greatest thrill in football for him? And he said, you put the ball down for Donny Sullivan, he's going to kick it 75 yards. And he said, you have to decide when to go and where to go. And when you go up with Jimmy Keever, probably at that stage, and then he says, he's with you there, and you have to climb in the air and then to hold the ball. So that has really gone out of the game, and with it is the drop kick, of course.
You only get drop kicked to the sideline these days. That's all that happens, isn't it, if you make a bad decision. Come here, Brian. We're talking about, of course, the build-up to the final and the whole lot and the favourite memories and moments.
as a kid, what were your favourite memories of Kerry? I mean, obviously, who were your heroes? Don't say the coach. Everybody says the coach. Say somebody else.
Well, I actually can't because I grew up a couple of doors away from him. But no, some of my earliest memories were out in the Park Road, Narch and Avuli, kicking around with the coach, actually. So
did he put you in goal or did you put him in goal?
I think there was a gang of, there was a cohort of lads out in Narch End there. I was the youngest, so they put me in goal. I had no choice in the matter. But yeah, thinking back, I suppose the 2000 All-Ireland final, I remember that quite vividly. The 2001 day up in Meath was actually my first Kerry game. So that was a disappointing one to go to. But no, thankfully after that we had a lot of great days. I was up in the hill for the 4 and 6 finals and 7 finals. So yeah, a lot of great days, a lot of great memories.
Yeah, it's interesting because you went from a spectator to actually playing it, and now you're going back to being a spectator again. Is it easy to make the transition back?
I suppose it is and it isn't. Definitely don't miss the hard slog in the cold November nights. But I suppose on the big days, yeah, you'd look at it and you know the buzz and you know the nerves and all the great things that go with the big days, like the All-Ireland finals. Yeah, I suppose you'd miss that. And the camaraderie in the dressing room and stuff as well after a big win is something you'd miss. So hopefully the boys will be experiencing that now Sunday evening.
Was it hard when you got dropped out of the WhatsApp group? Is that when it's really over?
I think the onus is on you to leave when you retire, so we weren't kicked out, thankfully.
You can hang in there or something. No WhatsApp group, of course, 1972, Eamon, or even 82, but what are your memories of Kerry as a younger fella?
Well, Santy brought me my first ball, and he put it in my side of the bed, and my brother got something like a book.
Right, okay.
So I think from that time on I want it, and I played an awful lot of games in my head, always, and I loved the idea of playing. You see, there was very little underage football at that time, not as organised as it is now, but it gave you the opportunities to see Kerry and what it means. I mean, Brian will know this well. Once you play with Kerry, people recognise you, even though it's 50 years later, and the football really, it makes Kerry. It's part of what, you know, what our psyche is, and we're always delighted, of course, to try and do the best on the particular day. And you know, I wish Kerry the best of luck on Sunday. It's the game everyone wants. It's the ideal game. The best footballer of all time playing for Kerry, that's the big plus. There are some minuses, all right, so it's going to be touch and go. There'll be nothing easy in this.
We'll keep the minuses now in case there's dubs listening to Radio Kerry this evening. I won't give them too much information. Brian, finally, how do you see Sunday going?
I think we could be in for a classic. I suppose from the Dublin point of view, they haven't won it in 3 years, which probably feels like an age to them. They have a couple of big guns back now as well, and Stephen Cluxton, Con Callum wasn't there last year.
Was Cluxton a surprise coming back? You as a goalie watching it?
I suppose, obviously, given the age profile, it did probably raise eyebrows this year, especially when over the last couple of years Comerford kind of did well, and there was a new goalie in during the league this year did well as well. But I suppose, yeah, there was raised eyebrows, but he's back now, and look, we've all seen what he can do. So Dublin are going to be raring for roars. There's some of them players probably coming to the tail end of their career as well, looking to break records, looking to make history, so they'll be all guns blazing. But I think on the Kerry side, this time last year, most of that team were looking to win their first All-Ireland. That monkey's off the back now, and they're looking to go down history as a great team and win back-to-back. And I can see Kerry winning it in a classic, maybe by 1 or 2.
Do you ever play Dick Horgan?
No.
Do you ever play Dick Horgan?
No. We leave the two boys there.
Santy should have bought you an accordion rather than a book or a ball, should you?
Did you ever hear about the referee that refereed the match with a tin whistle?
All right. That was for protection, I'd say, more than anything else coming off the field.
And there you go. That was from our All-Ireland final preview night in the Clarney Heights Hotel. And what a great night we had as well when we spoke to Eamon Fitzgerald and Brian Kelly and many, many more guests as well. Up after the break, we'll be talking All-Ireland Lady Football Captains as we join up with Margaret Flaherty, Marion Doherty and Bridget Leon.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry. brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, you're very welcome back to the final part of Terrace Talk here this evening, and many thanks for all of you who've joined in throughout the year. It's greatly appreciated from myself and Ivan and Keane on sound. But now, something really special, and we caught up in July with the All-Ireland winning ladies captains, of which there is a fair few of them, and we had Margaret Flaherty, Marion Doherty and Bridget Lean. They shared their moments from those famous days.
The Kerry team did 1-9 in a row there, but I think a lot of that would go back to the minor team. A lot of us, 10 or 11 of the players from the minor team in 1980 and 1981, those were the players really that formed the backbone of the Kerry senior ladies team. So Mick Fitzgerald, really, he was chairperson of the county board. He was a president of the LGFA in more recent times, and Mick was our trainer there and our manager, and he was the person that, I suppose, brought the whole thing together in Kerry. You had four senior clubs at the time. You'd have had our own team here in Beaufort, Castle Island, who were the dominant force in ladies football, even nationwide, us and Sex, and then Ardfert, Abbey Dorney would have had a team as well. But the rivalry at club level was ferocious. But then everybody went into Kerry, and Mick had a real thing like that. There were no stars or no individuals playing with Kerry. It didn't matter at the end of the day who was getting the scores. Everybody played as a team, and that was, he drilled that into us really. And the other thing about him, all his training sessions, I think he was ahead of his time too. All his training sessions involved the ball. There was very little running and fitness. He always concentrated and emphasised the importance of developing skills, and he, like, it was just natural for us to play together the way Mick kind of coached us. You always looked up and to see was there a player in a better position, and he was always, like, he was a man for kicking the ball in and using the traditional skills of Kerry football. And I think that the golden era, there would have been no golden era if Mick Fitzgerald hadn't been there, that he'd be the person that I would give most credit to. You see, you don't think about 4 in a row or 5 in a row or 6 in a row, those things. You look at the next game and you want to win the next game, and records don't come into it really. You just want to keep on winning, and you just do your best every time you go out. And there wasn't any drive, any particular drive, like, to create records or to do anything like that. It would have been just the next game and to win the next game. And we just had 10 or 11 players that would have played in every single one of those, and any one of the 10 or 11 players would have been equally as good. I would have been one of the laziest players on the team. I hated all the running, but I just loved it when Mick went, the football was introduced, and all I wanted to do was ever play games. We had great forwards as well on the team, that, and like our full back line. We, like, Bridget Lean and Tess Horgan, Tess O'Carroll in the corners, and what it was, Nora Hellis here, or my sister Filler, whoever was full back. Like, we were very lucky with the players we had at the time. We just had a very good 20 players really over those number of years, and any one of those you could pick out. Bridget Lean, cornerback, was the best cornerback that ever played ladies football. Like, Mary Lane, centre back, her daughter Lorraine now is midfield for the Kerry ladies. Mary is the only player that has kicked a 45 in an All-Ireland final at the moment, and Mary would do it for fun. Like, she was such a good player. Annette Walsh was, like, midfield. Annette was just a brilliant midfielder. So we were lucky with the players that we had, that we came on the scene together, and we were lucky in the manager we had that kind of got us playing together. Because, as I said, the rivalry at club level would have been fairly serious, but he got us playing together. Once you put on the Kerry jersey, you forgot about club and you were playing as a team.
There you go, put on the Kerry jersey and you forgot about the club. I suppose you probably remember the Castle Island, probably still on the way out. It's nice to hear that. I mean, Mary Jo, of course, I mean, she gets all the plaudits, and rightly so for the whole time. But of course, there was plenty of players involved as well, and delighted to be joined on the line by another nervous cat, Bridget. Put on the headphones. Oh my God, yes, you're getting so professional. Oh yeah, fair play, Marion. Catch on here, Marion, quick, will you? Delighted to have Margaret Flaherty on the phone. Margaret, good evening to you. How are you keeping?
Keeping well now, Donald, thank you very much.
Good stuff.
Ryan, hi, Bridge, how are we doing?
Not too well. They're kind of getting better, you know. All this is very new to them. come here, Margaret, I mean, your memories of that time. You also were a captain. What are your memories, first of all, of the year that you captained Kerry?
I suppose the thing was that it was the second year in Crow Park, so there was a certain degree of familiarity. I think that unfortunately, sort of the year before, Bridget had missed out, I think, with a broken hand. So we were kind of going into the second year. So so for some of us, there was a degree of familiarity about it. But I suppose at the time, it was very busy weekend sports-wise, because I think that the Nissan Classic was on that weekend, with the final coming into Dublin as well, and obviously with Stephen Roach and Sean Kelly, and you know, winning the Tour de France and everything else that weekend, you know, it was you know, hard to get sort of some publicity or awareness. But the interesting thing about it was that, having played in Crow Park the year before, I think that there was an awareness sort of growing about ladies football. And actually, we were invited on the Late Late Show before the on the Friday night with Gay Byrne, myself, and I think Eileen Lawler, and that. And then on the other side, you had the Westmead captain, who's Joe Glennon, and one of our players along with her. So, you know, that in itself was pretty
scary. Talk to us about that, because I mean, that's something that's really been it's a new thing to me, and the whole going on the Gay Byrne, the Late Late, because that time that was the pinnacle show of everybody wanted to watch it and everybody listened to it, and I mean, in the mid 80s it was probably the only show in town. Were you nervous that night?
Pretty nervous, all right, yeah. I mean, it was conscious that you were representing kind of ladies football and trying to put the best foot forward as well, in terms of, you know, representing the game and, you know, what it meant to us as players and everything else. So, yeah, it was a bit scary, but, you know, you try to knock that out of your mind, and you know, just sort of make like you're just talking one to one with Gay Byrne.
I know, it's awesome. That's pretty amazing. Of course, you won the All Ireland. You got to lift the cup one more time. What were the homecomings like, Margaret, at that stage? Well, I presume they were getting a little bit better. I presume a few more people were showing up, I suppose, in Tralee when the train pulled in.
Well, typically it was back via bus and that. So actually, typically it was the homecoming would have been actually in Castle Island for the most part. And there was a really good group out in terms of kind of welcoming the team home. I suppose maybe the fact that, you know, it was a lot of the times there were Castle Island captains and that as well. So, you know, you probably have a few hundred out, you know, which in and of itself was quite an achievement, was something, I suppose, that, you know, as the guys had said, wasn't anything that you had really thought about or focused on, because you were just thinking about the game and everything else. So, you know, for people actually, I suppose, to be aware that the game was on as a starting point, and then to actually come out on a Monday night to kind of welcome back, that was certainly something very new to us. And I think that all came about from the move from sort of the regional pitches into Crow Park. I mean, you know, the playing in Crow Park really created a much greater awareness of ladies football than that.
Mm-hmm. Mary, your first experience of going into Crow Park, we're after finding out now, Bridget didn't make the bus for the first one, did she? She was injured. But your first outing, I mean, like, when you went home eventually and you told your parents or your brothers or your next-door neighbours, God, the All-Ireland Finals in Croke Park this year, that had to be pretty exciting, was it?
Yeah, my brother Pat was very excited about it, because he captained the Sims team in the years before that, and he was so excited to see his sister playing Crook Park. It was a fabulous pitch to play on, like playing on carpet. Even if you weren't fit, you'd feel fit in Crook Park. It was amazing. And the whole setup, I think they were taking down one of the stands that year, and then we had the presidential parade, which was all new to us. It was unbelievable.
What was that like? I mean, you march behind the R10 by his band, you see it on television with the men, I suppose, at the time, and you know you were doing it as well. I mean, was there nerves? Was there excitement? Was it great crack? Was it a bit of a buzz? Or, my God, was it so scary you didn't know what was going on?
Walking behind the band, we didn't take any notice. We were talking about the game and what we were going to do, and we were sizing up our opposition on the opposite side. We didn't have as much of the crowd that they have now today, but it was exciting for us. And we took it all in our stride. And, it was just nice.
Yeah.
It was all new to us, like, it was all new to the opposition as well.
Yeah.
And No, we've thoroughly enjoyed our experience there.
They've been turning around, they've put the fist up, some of them, not all supporters.
And we came home after a while, you were doing every year, didn't you?
And going up the steps of the Hogan stand was even more exciting.
And any time Ambrose would make a comment during the analysis,
the steps of the Hogan stand, because when you won your All-Ireland, it wasn't
the perfect scenario. But I tell you, Ambrose, but I tell you, the man from Guinea who did it stand back for him, and the smile himself from Knocknagoshan as well was with him. So I suppose there'd be a bit of temper.
Was she even on the team?
If they can pick this off, it's going to give them a massive boost in and 10 All-Ireland semi-finals. No, it's going to be a huge game. I do hope the Kerry crowd will come out and support them, because they deserve it. They're great ambassadors.
It didn't matter to us where we played.
Like you have
we actually didn't care once we were playing and once we were winning.
So there's a lot of good footballers there, and it's a lovely, like Denise said earlier, he loves watching the football, you know, and it's free-flowing football, and it's very, very enjoyable to watch.
Way to get better is playing basketball, playing, you know, pick up with your friends, just working on different things, you know. Social media is big, like it's not too hard, you know, find a video or like a drill that you might want to try with like all the different trainers and stuff there are nowadays, but just keep researching yourself and just doing things to get better.
No, it's a huge honour to wear the county jersey in any county, you know, wherever you're from. But in Kerry, it's particularly, you're following on from legends, you're just there, and, you know, it's a special jersey, Donal, to be fair, and the tradition that goes with it. So anyone that's fortunate enough to get a jersey from 1 to 26 or 1 to whatever, 21 at that time, you know, you cherish it, and especially if you win, it's even more special.
We were all the same. We wanted to do well, so we can't deny that. We don't have a bit of sparkling. There's no point being at it. So, yeah, we wanted to do well, but it's all to the garbage. They're great. I mean, they're great kids. They wanted it. Got to made a mistake. They wouldn't be on telling you. So that's good. That's all very important. They were hungry for it, so onwards and upwards.
It's brilliant that the ladies are getting the attention that they're getting, but back in our time, we didn't get as much attention, and I think it was easier to concentrate on the game and perform well without the scrutiny that they're under today. It's not easy on them. It's not easy to relax going out in a game and be able to do what you know what you can do, and make a mistake, you're in trouble.
Do you know when the Cork match is on? Well, I tell you one thing, Liam will not be saying how he thinks it'll be on this year, because
don't ask me,
it's not going to be a 9 point this year on your listeners for sure. I can't find it anywhere, but I presume it's sorted at this stage. We have the weekend for it anyway.
I think it's Saturday night.
It's going to be Saturday night, because there's a big event.
Marathon in Sunday, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And hopefully that game won't turn into a marathon either.
I was talking to Mark Ryan last night, our captain, who was very nervous pre-match, and he said when he ran out and when the Fossa players, including the two Cliffords, like when the Fossa players were standing and gave a guard of honour to Rathmore out onto the field, the words he used was, he said, I felt 10 feet tall. So that was a huge, huge lift, you know, for all our players to get running out onto the field. And, you know, small little things like that made a difference yesterday.
We go up north, and Liam will tell you about a haunted house there that we stayed in one night up north. And I suppose Liam slept with one eye open, the door open, the television on, the lights. But
and my clothes on as well, Tim.
And you well,
just think of the room.
And Ambrose O'Donovan wouldn't let him into another room because he was a bit scared. So, look, I tell you, and Liam will tell you, and John will tell you, there's always a story on a trip with us.
You have to have buy-in. You know, anyone that's there, they need to work hard. You know, everything is getting so difficult, and S&Cs and fitness, everything is changing now. And it's just as hard to win in Division 5 as it is Division 1. It's the same thing. You're playing it to win. So if you are winning, it's a little bit easier. But we do struggle with numbers. But like I say, winning is the name of the game. And while you are winning, that'll keep fellas interested, and they're enjoying it then, you know.
Yeah.
People talking about drinking bans and about discipline and that. Liam took a different view. He celebrated, and he wanted his team to celebrate when they succeeded and when they played. That bond and the respect that the players have for him is you know, it's unbelievable. I was down in West Limerick today. There was nothing talked about, only Liam Kevins. Huge shock, you know, disbelief, a larger than life character is granted his eternal reward far too early.
I suppose it's kind of, you kind of live with the fear you don't want to be losing. Like, nobody, no matter who you are, nobody likes losing. And I can, from being involved in the group last year, like, there's a real urge to win inside there. Nobody, supposed to be kind of be bad losers, I suppose, in one way as well.
The big secret now is mind the ball. Every coach, every sideline that I go to now, all I hear the coach is shouting, mind the ball, mind the ball, mind the ball. You know, there's no such thing as kick it, let's see a bit of excitement. The excitement has gone out of the game. And if we don't have excitement, you don't have a game.
I was thrilled, Donald. I mean, you know, Senior League of Ireland Soccer here in Ireland, in Kerry, was fantastic. Looking forward to it all week, and, you know, as it got closer, Friday, you just counted down the hours to, you know, when you're going in early queuing, there's a good crowd queuing from 6 o'clock on, and you just go in and you see, you know, Montauk Park was looking fantastic, the weather held up, and then just seeing the two teams coming out. It was unreal. It's something we've all dreamed for a long, long time.
It's amazing to come back, like, when you're young and you're dreaming of, like, what all the other older girls that we look up to, like the senior girls, winning their All-Irelands. And my sister was on the Kerry senior team, so I was always looking up to her. So to finally win it myself and bring it home to, like, the club and all the younger ones in the club, it's brilliant. I suppose the main goal is to play in Croke Park someday like them.
My wife came in the door and she was absolutely thrilled. My wife's from Cork, Denise, so you'll enjoy this, okay? Because the man on Radio Kerry said it wasn't a penalty. And then the husband says, it was a stonewall penalty. What do you want to
vote? The husband does not know football.
Imagine,
your wife is a good guy. She knows her football, that one.